Today, we have another true English story from Ivan and a special guest who has published fiction books, and she's going to help you improve your storytelling. This is Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig. Hi, Reza.
Hi, Craig. How's it going?
Pretty good, my friend. How are you?
I'm very well. And yourself?
I'm doing great because today we have a very special guest who we'd like to welcome to the show.
Who is that sitting over there?
Dana, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's lovely to have you here.
Well, it's lovely to be here, of course.
More from Dana later, but with over 45 years of teaching between Reza and I,
And Dana told us to point out 60 if we add her.
Exactly. So with over 60 years, could you ask for more of English teaching experience? We're here to help you improve your English and take it to the next level. So as I said at the beginning, we have another true story kindly sent in to us by Ivan. And before we listen to Ivan's story, let's look at some vocabulary that he used. Reza, give us an idea of the kind of words Ivan uses in his story.
Well, he's got a good range of vocabulary. One word which you're going to need to understand is creepy. Creepy. If something's creepy, it makes you frightened, makes you feel a bit worried, not relaxed. It's de miedo, algo de miedo.
Yeah,
you don't feel quite right.
You could speak about a creepy house or a creepy room.
Or even a creepy person.
I was going to say, you can have a creepy person, right?
A person who kind of just makes you feel not quite happy to be in their company for some reason.
Well, that would be a creep.
Yeah, creep. So they're creepy. Yeah, they're oof.
And you know the song by Radiohead.
Oh, I love that song. Creep. What a brilliant song. Yeah.
Dana, do you know any creepy people?
Well, I do know a few. I have a few in the casal near my house, so.
Let's hope they're not listening.
When you're in the casal, do you ever feel under siege?
I do feel under siege in my house near the casal.
Okay.
Especially during fallas.
What's that word, Reza? Siege. How do you spell it?
Siege is S-I-E-G-E. So under siege is like being attacked. So when a city is under siege, it means it's been attacked in days of old, whenever cities were fortified to protect themselves. Sometimes armies collected outside to try to force them to surrender, and they would put the city under siege. El sitio o asedio in Spanish.
Another word that Ivan uses is to climb, escalar or ascender. To climb a hill, to climb a mountain is another verb he uses.
He also talks about breaking a bone. So to break a bone, a hueso. Dana, have you ever broken a bone?
I have not.
Oh, you're very lucky. What
and
about
yourself?
You, Craig? No, I haven't myself, actually, to be honest.
Me neither.
Oh, no, I tell a lie. I had a bone broken on purpose because it had to be realigned. I forgot about that. Yeah, so I didn't break it myself, but the doctor very kindly broke it for me and then fixed it in the right place. I just remember that.
I bet that was painful. Another expression Ivan uses is down to earth. We had this expression last episode when we spoke about Sir David Crystal being a very down to earth person. How would you say that in Spanish, or how would you describe it, Reza?
Oh, I don't know. Practical, like sin aires, I might say. Sin aires, no?
Yeah, if say someone's down to earth, they're very normal, natural, I think you'd say, a natural person.
And Ivan's stories, he talks about growling. Oh, you're frightening us now. How creepy. So growl is one of those.
That was Dana, that wasn't me.
Was that Dana?
That was my stomach.
Ah, she's hungry. No, so to growl is like one of those words which kind of sounds like what it is, this onomatopoeia. Growl, if I exaggerate it.
Jaws, J-A-W-S, famous film and book. Peter Benchley, wasn't it? He wrote Jaws.
The one about the shark.
Yeah, the shark.
Yeah, that the Spanish called tiburón, but it isn't. In English, it's mandíbulas.
Exactly.
Which doesn't sound that good in Spanish, does it?
No.
So Ivan speaks about the jaws of an animal. and quijada, so the jaws of a dog or a wolf, perhaps. And he speaks about the drool, D-R-O-O-L.
Drool is a thing I do a lot.
What is it, though? How do you describe it?
When saliva comes out of my mouth when I'm sleeping at night on the pillow. Yeah. So, babiar, to drool. So, I don't do it on purpose, listeners. If I forget to close my mouth, I drool.
It's a verb and a noun. So drool coming out of the jaws of an animal, or to drool, which is what Reza does on his pillow.
Yeah. But also you drool sometimes for positive reasons. Like Dana might be drooling right now thinking about this lunch that she's come here for. And her stomach's growling. She's waiting for. You can drool if you're anticipating food.
That's true. I noticed that now there's a new emoji on WhatsApp, which is the drool emoji.
What does it look like?
It's a very satisfied looking face with drool coming out of the mouth. You haven't used it.
No, I haven't seen
it
that yet.
It comes in very handy.
Okay, I will look for that next time I'm sending a WhatsApp. There are many similar verbs to look. And you could say, for example, to stare, which is to look with intensity. Another one is to glance, G-L-A-N-C-E, which means to look at something quickly. And in Ivan's story, he is glancing over his shoulder. He's looking behind him very quickly as he's running away. Now, that can also be a noun, a glance, which means ojeada or mirada in Spanish.
There's an animal mentioned in Ivan's two story, which is a snake, serpiente, snake. And also he's got a nice verb to crawl, something which cats do quite often. So that's why in Spanish you say gatear. But people can crawl.
And babies.
Babies can crawl. That's C-R-A-W-L.
Another verb he uses, to grasp, agarrar. To grasp something, to hold something quite tightly in your hands.
There's another meaning of grasp as well, though, Craig, isn't there? If you say, I can't quite grasp what you're trying to say, what
yeah,
do you mean by that?
I can't understand exactly what you mean. I don't get the meaning of what you're saying. I can't grasp it. We have hands, which we use to grasp things, but cats and dogs have paws, P-A-W-S. So that's another word that Ivan uses.
He uses a nice expression in his story, which is that damn place, ese maldito lugar. So damn is like for things you don't like, things that give you bad luck or things that annoy you. You say damn.
You might want to be a bit careful with that word because it could be considered vulgar, especially in American culture.
Yeah, it could be a nasty insult, couldn't it, if you use it?
If you were to say damn you.
Right, that's quite bad, isn't it?
It's quite strong.
God damn it is a very American expression, isn't it?
Well,
God damn it.
You would not say that in front of your grandmother.
No, she wouldn't like it. She wouldn't like that cussing.
Does anybody really say cussing?
Yes, we do.
All right. What does cussing mean?
To cuss means to use swear words, taboo language.
Out of breath is another expression that Ivan uses, sin aliento. If you run a lot, if you run very fast, you will probably be out of breath. You will find it quite difficult to breathe. So we're going to listen to Ivan's story now, but as usual, we have a couple of questions for you to think about while you're listening. Reza, what questions do we have for the listeners?
The first question is, where did the story happen? Where did it take place?
The second one, what did Ivan and his friends climb over? They climbed over something. So number two, what did Ivan and his friends climb over?
And Dana, what's the last question?
What attacked Ivan and his friend?
So listen to Ivan, try to answer those questions, and you can find them on the website at inglespodcast.com/168. Quickly to remind you, where did the story happen? What did Ivan and his friends climb over? What attacked Ivan and his friend?
Hi guys, I really wanted to share this funny and a bit creepy story with somebody else. and what a better place than here with all the English learners. Firstly, please be lenient with all the mistakes that I can make. Well, this rad adventure took place in a small suburb in the nervios of my home in Valencia. Me and my best friend Kini decided as any given day to live some kind of adventure, because by when almost turned 15, we always used to get away from home together to live new experiences. And the further we went, the funnier it was. Well, it was a boring evening in the summer, when we both apparently had the same idea, go further. We decided to assault a school, and after being around it for almost 1 hour like a siege of an ancient city, we started to climb the walls. Has to be said that I had to lie on his leg to jump and reach the top of the wall. After several attempts, I could finally hold on the wall and jump to the other side. Meanwhile, Kini was staring incredulously at me. Maybe he was wondering himself, how did I get not to fall down? Anyway, while I was looking around, Kini reached me after almost breaking some bone due to the painful way he dropped to the ground. As too brave and why not hasty and obviously not down to earth guys, we advanced in seeking the surroundings and staring at whatever the mood, and suddenly snap shook at us and we nearly got a heart attack. Two black and haunted growling dogs were running toward us while they sawed us their jaws while drooling. As soon as we realized we turned and began to run as our life depended on that, I couldn't help glancing often to make sure the dogs were still far from us, and luckily we could reach the wall, and as a couple of snakes crawled up the wall while the dogs jumped and tried to grasp us with their paws. Fortunately, they couldn't do anything but stall to us, while me and my friend left that dumb place. In the end, we went back to home without saying anything. Out of breath and scared, we both knew that this story was more a lesson to write down on our minds than anything. And for sure, we will never try to repeat. That's all, guys. Thanks a lot for your attention and to help me with English. Bye.
Firstly, thank you very much, Ivan, for sending in your story. Reza, let's answer the questions first and then see if we can help Ivan to improve a little his story. So where did the story happen? Where did it take place?
In a suburb of Valencia.
Correct.
Okay, I got a question for you. What did Ivan and his friends climb over?
They climbed over a wall. And Dana, what attacked Ivan and his friend?
Two black dogs.
Yeah, two drooling black dogs growling. So Ivan used some very nice vocabulary and expressions in his story. I particularly liked his use of creepy, as we said at the beginning when we were speaking about words, new words, creepy. And I liked please be lenient, which he said in his introduction. He said, please be lenient with me. Please be gentle. Please don't criticize me too much. Well, we won't do that, Ivan. Anything else, Reza?
Yes, you used a sequence with two comparatives. You said, the further we went, the funnier it was. So further and funnier are comparatives. That's a nice sentence construction, isn't it?
Yep.
The funnier we went, the further we went, the funnier it was.
It's quite hard to say. The further we went, the funnier it was.
Yeah, and to be honest, at first I find it hard to understand you, Ivan, because of the pronunciation. But the vocabulary is very good.
Also, jump to the other side. I quite like that expression when he was speaking about climbing the wall, jumping to the other side, and also staring incredulously at me. So that was a nice expression as well, to stare incredulously at someone.
Craig, what would you say, and Dana as well, what would you say was the main weakness of that story we just heard?
I would say I think what he was doing is using a lot of vocabulary that he doesn't usually use. It's not in his day to day. And therefore, he had difficulty pronouncing it. So I know he was probably also a bit nervous. And when you're nervous, perhaps you're not going to speak as well. And so I think that was his biggest flaw.
Yeah, I agree. And also, I think where, as we know, when you read Spanish, you tend to pronounce every letter as you write it. So you write it and you pronounce it. But with English, there are pronunciation curiosities and differences. You don't always pronounce the words as they are written. And I think Ivan probably wrote the story first and then read it. And in reading it, mispronounced some of the words, which made it a little bit difficult to understand. An example of this, Ivan, is something we've spoken about in previous podcasts, the past tenses of regular verbs when there's an ed at the end. Now, if the verb finishes with a t or a d sound, those are the only times you actually pronounce the ed as id. So, for example, the verb start finishes with t, so started. The verb need finishes with d sound, so needed. Other examples: hated, wanted, decided, landed. So only those verbs, Ivan, that have the t and d sound, you should actually pronounce the id at the end. Any other pronunciation notes or comments?
As I said earlier, I like the expression, the further we went, the funnier it was. But I find it hard to understand your pronunciation of further and funnier. They're quite hard to pronounce, those words. I think in general, the F-U of further and funnier, the U can be a tricky vowel to pronounce because it changes a lot. So in further, it's the sound, further. And in funnier, it's the sound, like up, funnier.
Yeah, this is a perfect example where you don't always pronounce the vowels or the letters the same way. I mean, here we have the same vowel, U, but in different words, it's pronounced completely differently.
I'd be really interested to hear Dana in her normal accent pronounce those words.
Further, funnier.
Oh, this is music to my ears. I feel we can gang up on Craig. I think we can outnumber him by pronouncing all our R's.
Is it different to me?
Just the pronunciation of the R at the end.
Further, funnier.
Yeah.
Further, funnier.
Can you hear, listeners, the more R sound coming from Dana?
Can you say it?
Further, funnier.
Let's say Ivan's complete sentence. The further we went, the funnier it was.
The further we went, the funnier it was.
The further we went, the funnier it was. Who's giving most R sound there, Dan? Probably Dana, or is
Maybe.
It me? I don't know.
Definitely not me.
Yeah.
As a Londoner, I swallow my R's.
Yeah, but I mean, Craig's following Oxford English pronunciation. Standard English, which says at the end, R's are not pronounced. Whereas Dana is following typical American pronunciation, which is pronounce the R at the end. And I guess me as well, or maybe I'm kind of somewhere in the middle, being from Belfast. It's interesting to compare our pronunciation.
So one or two other words that could be slightly improved, Ivan, the pronunciation of nearby. Okay, nearby, and incredulously, stress the second syllable. Now, that's a long word, five syllables, incredulously, incredulously, stress the second, incredulously. And also soon, as in expression, as soon as.
I was doing a pronunciation activity with a class the other day, and I'm afraid that I knew no more about the answers than they did. It was the difference between the long oo and the shorter oo. Because in Belfast, there is no difference. It doesn't exist. We only have the short sound. So I have to look at the answer keys. Mm-hmm. I just don't know. It's the one sound that really gets me. Is soon long or short? It's long, is it?
It's long for me. Soon.
Soon.
It's long, right?
See you soon.
You know, I'm talking about the fact that soon apparently is long, but wood is short. I believe so because my book tells me so. But in Belfast, there is no long. They're all short. Nobody says soon in Belfast.
How do you say it?
Only an Englishman visiting says that. We say soon.
Soon.
We don't make it long. Mm. And technically, we're not saying it according to standard English pronunciation. But people will understand us. But we don't have the difference. Is it the same in the States? Do you make a difference or not there?
No, we would make a difference. See right. you soon.
Okay. You make the difference. Okay. That's interesting.
Another point, Ivan, was misuse of get. You used get a couple of times, which is a nice word to use in informal English, for example, when you're telling a story like this. But you said, after several attempts, I got finally hold on the wall. You could improve this by saying, after several attempts, I could finally hold on to the wall, or I was able to finally hold on to the wall. Another example of how you could improve your expression with get, you said, how did I get not to fall down? You could say, how did I not fall down? And another one, we nearly got a heart attack. The problem is it doesn't collocate. Get doesn't collocate with heart attack. It's better to say we nearly had a heart attack. Reza, any other comments?
Yes, you said, as too brave and why not hasty and obviously not down to earth guys. There's a few things there. I think what you were trying to say was, as too brave, hasty and obviously not down to earth guys.
So it's quite a complicated sentence, that.
It is. Well done for attempting it, eh? It's a very, very impressive attempt.
What does hasty mean? H-A-S-T-Y.
Hasty is fast, but in the impulsive sense, as being too fast, would you say? Well, is there an old saying, something like less haste, more speed?
Well, Benjamin Franklin said, haste makes waste. So if you go too quickly, you're going to make mistakes.
Makes sense to me. Another thing, Ivan, you said breaking some bone, which is a mistake I hear sometimes with my students, where you would use the indefinite article so breaking a bone, not some. If it were plural, you could say breaking some bones, more than one. But if it's just one, use breaking a bone.
Yes, a mistake you used with subjects is very common. You said staring at whatever it moved. You mean staring at whatever moved, because if we have a verb like moved, you can only have one subject with a verb in English. So you can say it moved, or you can say whatever moved, but you can't say whatever and it moved. I think that's a mistake that Spanish people make a lot. They put two subjects with a verb. Maybe because in Spanish, you're so used to not having any subjects with a verb, like movió, and we insist, oh no, don't forget the subject. As teachers, you say, oh, well, I'm going to have two subjects or three subjects with a verb. Well, no, you can only have one subject with a verb in English grammatically.
Another thing you said, Ivan, we advanced seeking the surroundings. Now, you can use the verb to seek, which is similar to look. So, for example, in an advertisement, you could say man seeking attractive woman, for example, which means looking for. But as Dana said before, you probably don't use that verb to seek very often. You probably use the verb to look. So just use the verb to look. We advanced looking at the surroundings, because in that context, you wouldn't really seek surroundings. You would look at surroundings.
Yes, seek is more look for, and we find it in our game hide and seek, which is what you call escondite.
Exactly.
Yes, I'm just thinking of our lesson on Old English, the last episode. I think it's a Bible quote, seek and ye shall find the Lord. Seems to ring a bell. Ye, Nestor, remember he asked us about thou and thine and thee and all that. Seek and ye shall find the Lord.
I've noticed recently quite a religious taste creeping into our podcast, Reza.
Yeah. Well, in this episode, it might be Dana. I don't know if she comes from the Bible Belt or not. Do you,
well,
Dana?
I do.
Oh,
I do
she
come
does,
from
you see?
The Bible Belt.
She's from the what would we say in Spanish for Bible Belt?
I don't know.
La zona de la Biblia.
De la Biblia. Yeah. Zona religiosa.
Yes. I come from a long line of churchgoers. So.
Well, me too, but I'm thinking more about the fact that in America, there are big areas of the United States where the vast majority of people seem to go to church. It's more typical to go than not to go.
Yes, in fact, if you don't go, people will invite you to their church because they assume that you don't have one and you need one.
You're a lost sheep.
You are.
Speaking of animals, Ivan said two black and haunted growling dogs, which was a good effort at putting adjectives before a noun, but better to say two black growling dogs and keep it simple, adjectives before the noun.
While they showed us their jaws while drooling, that doesn't sound quite right because you've got while twice there.
Yeah, two whiles.
Better just to say, while they showed us their drooling jaws.
And to run as our life depended on that. Better to say, to run as our life depended on it. Not on that, but on it. And finally, in the end, we went back to home. Another common mistake for Spanish speakers. In the end, we went home. So no to, just we went home. And one final thing, Ivan, about punctuation. Your sentences were a little bit long and without paragraphing. So if you go to the show notes at inglespodcast.com/168, I've just copied the text that you sent me, and then we've tried to improve it a little and give you a few improvements in also spacing and punctuation. So if you compare our suggested improvements with your original, hopefully you'll be able to learn a little and improve your story for next time. And I'd like to ask Dana to read the story with suggested improvements.
All right, then. Ivan from Valencia's true English story. This adventure took place in a small suburb near my home in Valencia. My best friend Kenny and I decided, as we did most days, to have some kind of adventure, because by the time we had turned 15, we would often go far from home together to live new experiences, and the further we went, the funnier it was. It was one boring summer evening when we both apparently had the same idea, to go further. We decided to explore a school, and after walking around it for almost an hour, like a siege on an ancient city, we started to climb the walls. I had to stand on Kenny's leg to jump and reach the top of the wall. After several attempts, I finally managed to grab the top and jump to the other side. Meanwhile, Kenny was staring incredulously at me. Maybe he was wondering to himself why I didn't fall. Anyway, while I was looking around, Kenny caught up with me after almost breaking a bone due to the painful way he dropped to the ground. As two brave, impulsive, and obviously not very sensible guys, we slowly moved forward, looking at the surroundings and staring at whatever moved. Suddenly, we were shocked by a loud snap, and we nearly had a heart attack. Two fierce black dogs were running toward us, growling and showing us their drooling teeth and jaws. As soon as we realized, we turned and began to run as if our life depended on it. I couldn't help glancing behind me, often, to make sure the dogs were still far from us. Luckily, we managed to reach the wall just as a couple of snakes crawled up it, and the dogs jumped and tried to reach us with their paws. Fortunately, they could only bark and stalk us while my friend and I made our escape. In the end, we went home without saying anything. Out of breath and scared, we both knew that this story was a life lesson to keep in our minds. For sure, we'd never try to repeat it.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Dana. That's wonderful. Obviously a professional reader of fiction. Before we continue with the podcast, Reza and I would like to say thank you to our sponsors, italki. Now, if you are studying English and you're interested in finding a personal one-to-one online teacher, we strongly recommend a service that Reza and I have both tried called italki. On their webpage, you'll be able to find a teacher that can help you with your English at a time that's convenient to you and at a price that's convenient for your pocket. So if you'd like more information about italki's services and take advantage of a free lesson, if you sign up through our webpage, go to inglespodcast.com/italki. That's italki. And Reza and I would like to thank italki for sponsoring this podcast.
So, Dana, do you mind if we pick your brains a little bit?
What does that mean?
To pick someone's brains is to use their knowledge to find out things that you don't know anything about. They've got knowledge, they've got expertise. Because Dana is a published author. She's had books published. So we'd like to take advantage of her knowledge and find out a little bit about the world of storytelling. Would you mind?
Of course not.
How many books have you published so far?
I've published 3 novels of historical fiction.
3. The last one is very recent, I believe.
Yeah, it just came out in May. And that one I'm especially excited about because it was really the first book I ever wrote. And I started working on it over 10 years ago. And it's just out and available to the public now. The book actually takes place here in Valencia, the city where I live. Mm-hmm. So it's very exciting for me.
Dana, what is it that makes you write stories?
Well, that's a good question, I must say. When I first started writing, I began writing poems and just wanting to make descriptions and kind of have some honest expression. I went on to writing travel books just for friends and family. My husband...
What, like Rough Guide and that type of
no,
thing?
No. About my own traveling.
Oh, travel books, not
kind of...
guidebooks.
Right. Journal type things. So, for example, when I did the Camino de Santiago, I kept a journal and then I transcribed it and made some photocopies for friends and family. I did the same when I lived in Costa Rica. I wrote a book about it for my daughters who were quite young at the time, so they would remember. And I started writing true things, let's say.
Dana's lived in Costa Rica. Did you hear that? Did our Costa Rican listeners hear that? I'm so jealous of her. She's lived in Costa Rica. In fact, she told me earlier that she has actually held a sloth. Un perezoso costarricense. Oh, I'm so jealous. It's one of my dreams.
Yes, we had a wonderful house in a town called Barba de Heredia, if you know that town. And our house was reputedly haunted.
Was it creepy?
It was. It wasn't creepy because my husband learned it was haunted and he didn't tell me until we got back to Spain 6 months later.
So you never thought of it as being a creepy
but
place?
But he was kind of nervous when we were living there. And I thought it was very odd. So he didn't want us to have this kind of nervous energy in the house.
Tell me, Dana, do you only write in English or do you write in other languages?
Only in English. I think it would be very difficult to express yourself fully in another language, which is why I admire people like Ivan and Marcelo and your other contributors for attempting to do it. It's very hard.
Yet you do speak, as well as Spanish, you speak French as well, isn't that right?
My French, I have a degree in French, but I haven't used it very recently. I was in Strasbourg last summer, and things were all coming back to me, but it's quite rusty.
Tell me, do you read in foreign languages? Do you read novels in Spanish or French?
Occasionally. I'm very bad because I love reading, and so I usually just read for pleasure. And pleasure for me is the joy of reading in English.
You said that you started because your latest book is called The Admiral's Baths. And you said you started writing that 10 years ago. So it was the first book you actually started. Why did you, first of all, why did you stop writing it? And secondly, why did you decide to finish it?
All right. That book started, it was the first fiction I ever really wrote, serious fiction. I mean, I had written short stories and poems as a child and as a young person, but I was translating the website for the monument here in Valencia. And it was a very long project. It was months worth of work because the website included all kinds of information about the architecture, the restoration process, the owners, the history, everything you could possibly want to know. And I became fascinated with the monument itself. And one day I was translating the bit about the owners. And in the mid-1500s, mid-16th century, the first non-nobles bought it. So the first humble, kind of modest people bought the bathhouse. And it said that they took on a great debt, that the husband died shortly thereafter, and that the woman, the wife, was stuck with this business plus a bakery. And finally, a man bought it, all of her businesses in one go. And so I began thinking about that very boring bit of history. And I thought, okay, what kind of person would buy a business that was not very successful? And I thought, well, perhaps a gambler, a person that would make a bet. He's making a bet and trying to see if he can win. And then I thought, what kind of couple were they? Were they in love? How did she feel when he died? And who was this man who bought the business? Was he her savior? Was he an opportunist? What was he? And I began thinking about this, and this was the seed, the beginning of the book.
So all these questions coming up got you interested in the story and really activated your imagination to find out some more about the bathhouse.
Exactly. So, and I started thinking somebody should write a novel about this. Somebody should write about this monument. Somebody, somebody, somebody. And finally, I decided I could be the person. And I wrote the first draft, which was based on that story. And that is one part of this book.
Mm-hmm. How many drafts did you write?
Well, many, many, many drafts.
Do you always do that for all your stories?
Well, it's very important to write the first version, and then to put it away, I would say for at least 3 months, but the longer the better. And then you look at it again with fresh eyes, and you immediately begin making changes, and you improve your text. When you go back to your text, you make improvements, and that can be a process that can go on for years, really.
So this idea of redrafting, revisiting, constantly improving and thinking how you can make your story and your text better, I think that's one thing that listeners who are writing stories in English can learn and use, because I know from my students, and Rez, I don't know if it's the same with yours, that they tend to write it once and then they think they've finished. Yeah. That idea of revisiting and going back, yeah, constantly improving, I think is one thing that the listeners can take away from this. And Dana, do you have any other advice that future storytellers who will be sending us audios, we hope, could use to improve their stories?
Well, after listening to this story, I think it's wonderful that he obviously tried to learn new vocabulary and to use new expressions. But perhaps you want to use also words that you're used to, ordinary words. Even professional writers also like to use the words people use in their everyday lives, normal conversations. If not, your dialogue sounds strange. You want to, if you need to look in a thesaurus, you probably are overthinking it.
Yeah. Keep it simple, folks. Keep it simple. Keep it clear. Very good advice. Reza, do you have any more questions before we wrap it up and ask Dana where we can find her books?
Just one. Have you ever thought of using a pen name?
What we should say what a pen name is.
Ah.
Well, that's when you use a name which isn't your real name. It's very typical for writers because they don't want perhaps to be recognized. They want to hide their identity. I'll tell you what, let me test you guys. I'm going to say a real name and you tell me what the writer used as their pen name. If I said to you, Amantine Lucille Aurore Dupin, who's that?
Is that Georges Sand?
Very good.
Oof, I didn't know that.
Georges Sand, the famous French female writer.
Well done, well done.
Female, though she called herself Jo. What about Eric Arthur Blair?
George Orwell.
Very well done. Charles Ludwig Dodgson.
That's...
Charles Dickens?
I was thinking, no, the writer of Alice in Wonderland.
Yes.
Which is...
Lewis Carroll.
Lewis Carroll.
And one more for you. Let me have a look at my notes. And forgive my pronunciation in advance. One of my favorite writers. Joseph Theodore Konrad Korzeniowski.
Oh, that's Joseph Conrad.
Very well done, yeah.
Heart of Darkness.
Who did write in a language which wasn't his first language, English.
True.
And he did it very well. So there's hope for you, listeners. Yep. He became one of the most famous writers in the English language, and it wasn't his first language. So there you go.
So please keep writing, please keep practicing, and please, please, please keep sending us your audio stories. We love receiving them. We got one yesterday from Josep from Barcelona, our friend, and we will be speaking about Josep's story in a couple of episodes. Before we go, just to remind you that Dana has written three books, The Admiral's Baths, Woman in the Photograph, Crossing on the Paris. That's about life in France, right?
Crossing on the Paris actually takes place in an ocean liner.
Wow.
In 1921. So the Paris is the name of the ship.
Okay. But you did write that when you were living in France?
No, I did not. I wrote all of my books in Valencia.
Okay.
It's true that that story begins in France and finishes in New York Harbor, and all of the action takes place on board.
So if people want to contact you and find your books, where's the best place for them to go?
They could look me up on Amazon, of course. They could look me up on Facebook. I have an author page where I give all the news about events and publications. And, of course, danaginther.com. And I'd love to hear from any of your listeners from Costa Rica or elsewhere.
And thank you very much for your time. And of course, there will be links to Dana's three books on the webpage at inglespodcast.com/168, and also a link to her Facebook page. And also, as a special surprise, at the end of this podcast, you'll hear Dana reading a small piece of her latest book, The Admiral's Baths, read by her, because her book is also available as an audiobook on the Audible service. So stay to the end and listen to her reading. And now it's your turn to practice your English. As usual, if you have a question, if you have a comment, please get in touch. You can send us a voice message, which, remember, is no longer than 90 seconds on speakpipe.com/inglespodcast. You can attach an audio file to your emails and send them to me, Craig, at inglespodcast.com.
Or to me at belfastreza@gmail.com.
And if you'd like more detailed show notes, join our Patreon program at patreon.com/inglespodcast. Reza, who are our lovely sponsors?
They are Nicolai, Ana, Pedro, Manuel García Betagón, Maite, Lara, Maria, Sara, Carlos, Tara, Mame, Juan, Cory Finneran, Mariel, Jorge, Raúl, Rafael, Manuel, Tarazona, Agus, Pauluki, Manuel Velázquez, Néstor, and Juan Carlos. Thanks to all of you.
Oh, well done. Also, thanks, of course, to Arminda from Madrid, to Alberto from Granada, and to Angelica Bello from Madrid for continuing generously to transcribe full transcriptions for you. Alberto has transcribed episodes 132 and 133, so we now have everything from 131 to 142, and, of course, episode number 1 transcribed by Angelica. Reza, what's next week?
And next week, we're going to attempt, but perhaps not succeed, in getting you to speak like a native.
We'll try. So join us next week on another episode of Aprender Inglés con Reza and Craig. Until then, it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from Dana.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from Reza. The music in this podcast is by Pitts. The track is called See You Later.
I sat back from the window, listening to the sound of the wheels folding back into the body of the plane. Today, that low mechanical hum, the wheeze of an aging robot, reminded me of an albatross. A huge, ungainly bird who, once airborne, tucks its stubby legs up to its belly and stretches its wings into a long glide. That image, so wholesome and peaceful, one I'd surely seen in some sleepy documentary, made me smile. I was nearly moved by my own calm. Before today, I used to have a flying phobia. Even when I was too young to grasp the concept of mortality, I'd had an instinctive fear of flying. Right now, however, I found myself looking back on that fear with a certain nostalgia. The sweaty palms, the pounding heart, the rash purchases of exorbitant bottles of mini absolutes. Every landing had come without incident, and yet, achy and tired, I descended from the airplane in semi-astonishment that I was still alive. Since the week before, however, it all seemed somewhat contrived, a middle-class peacetime attempt at an adrenaline buzz. A week ago, I'd learned something about fear. Like everything else, it's relative. Ms., a flight attendant was suddenly kneeling at my side, checking the paper in her hand. Ms. Rachel Cardon? Yes? I glanced over to find her looking at me with anxious curiosity. What? We just want to offer our assistance. She was using a conspiratorial whisper. In case you need anything. I blinked in confusion. Was this a new publicity campaign? Thanks, I said with a polite little nod. With a searching stare, she bored into my eyes, first one, then the other, then looked back at the paper. Excuse me, ma'am. It says here that you're blind? Oh, it came out in two syllables. Well, I'm not. That's strange, she said, turning pink. We always get a printout of our handicapped passengers. For some reason, you're marked here as blind. It must be a mistake, really. I smiled, trying to erase her embarrassment. You don't need to worry about me. A nervous laugh tumbled from her lips. Right then, sorry to have disturbed you. I watched her scuttle back down the aisle, back to her home turf of strange metal bins and coffee makers. Blind. The error was unusually apt. For the past week, I'd been like a kid in a perpetual game of pin the tail on the donkey, spinning around and unable to see. It wasn't that there hadn't been any warning. For days, meteorologists had been predicting extreme weather for the southern states. On April 25th, the tornado outbreak began, hitting Arkansas especially hard. 2 days later, swarms of twisters were touching down everywhere. I'd been watching the Weather Channel like some kind of reality show, mildly entertaining, shocking at times, but nothing to do with me, unwilling to imagine a tornado could possibly head in my direction. I wasn't even considering it. My head was too full of the noisy buzz of having just been dumped. 3 days before, and out of the blue, Todd Russell, my boyfriend of nearly a year, had upped and moved, 1 week before our summer-long trip to Spain. I felt detached from anything outside my own pain. Sick with anger and hurt, I'd barely eaten since he left. I was standing at the ironing board, absently watching a monster funnel attack a hospital in Cullman, Alabama. Although it was only 100 miles north, for me, it could have been on the moon. Half an eye on the storm, I jabbed the iron around the pockets of a shirt, cursing myself for my attraction to natural fibers, to unpredictable hipsters.